हरि ओम सहनावतु सहनाभुनक्तु सवीर्यंकरवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ओम शांति 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 ओम जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
okay so continuing with this positivism. So they're saying about being self-centered. So when there's no existence of an all-seeing God who sanctions the fruits of our action, then why should I be afraid of him? Only be a little careful that others may not understand about it. Only that if your selfishness is exposed, it will bring to fame, disciplinary action by the rulers and imitation by the wicked people, etc. In that case, either you or anyone else will not have happiness in this world. End quote. Perhaps this type of dealings will be seen in the characters of the atheistic materialists, if properly investigated. Once upon a time, a smart pundit had advised someone of a tedious observation of Chandrayana penance for the expiation of the offense of killing a spider. In reply, that person uttered, "Oh, the revered pundit, since your son also has participated in this action, the Chandrayana expiation is indicated in his case also." Anticipating a great danger that Bhattacharya pundit once again seemingly went through his books and replied that, "A, I have done a mistake in referring. Here it is said that a spider when killed becomes a piece of rag. Therefore you need not do anything towards expiation." This is the trend of the atheistic smartas. Even though the worship of God is seen in some of these doctrines, it is only atheistic, because God is the giver of the fruits of actions. The world beyond death for the jivas, etc., are the parts of atheistic karma. And therefore the signs of characteristic devotion or bhakti are not seen in it. On proper analysis, rather, it will be seen that, since the mere wording of unselfishness will ultimately turn everything into selfishness, just to save the doctrine from such a degradation, certain scholars of the atheistic Karmavad have adopted an all-knowing and fruit-giving God and declared that worship of such a God also is a part of the karma. In the philosophy of Comte, due to the apprehension of worship becoming useless in the practical working of the materialism, the imaginary deity is held as truly divine. Comte is more honest, whereas Jaimini, etc., are intelligent and prudent. Since Comte was easily exposed, his doctrine of worship could not draw the attention of the masses. The prudent doctrine of Jaimini is followed by the ordinary masses of smartas. In aggregate, the philosophies of Comte and Jaimini are the same. It will be revealed by review that the doctrine of karma will not be able to bring about the real well-being of human race, however efficiently it may be followed. Doctrines like secularism, positivism, smarta, karmavad, etc., will never be able to drive away the sin from the heart of human beings. They may rather create great obstacles to the principle of bhakti or pure devotion. The doctrine of karma also poses to be the guardian of bhakti and says that it, karma, is the follower of bhakti. It also says that it is reforming the hearts of unpious people and making them fit for offering at the feet of bhakti. All these assertions are only the effect of double allegiance. The real karma, which is the follower of bhakti, is called only as bhakti itself. So long the karma is distinguished by its own name, it works as the rival of bhakti and seeks for its own honor. The doctrine of karma claims that the development of science, society, art, etc. are its own activities. But when the karma is transformed to bhakti, the science, society, and art will receive much more development and brilliance. Here it is not explained further. Yeah. So, in other words, they're taking karma or good action on its own to be important. And the difficulty comes is that when karma is seen on its own and then saying from that you'll become qualified to take part in bhakti, then it's standing on its own. So here it's the problem's not karma as such. The problem is the idea that karma is actually stands on its own. Is when it does, then it'll be atheistic. When it's in connection with devotional service, then it's just called devotional service. It's not separately defined. Right? So when we say karma yoga and we're referring, as in devotional service, it simply means activities of devotional service. It doesn't stand on its own as a separate system. Right? So devotees have to also be careful in understanding it's just referring to different parts of the same thing. Does that make sense? Right? It means it's not that it's a separate system. Otherwise, the idea if you do this, you become good, you become pure, then you'll be qualified. No. It's a matter of you take up the devotional process and you become fixed in devotional service, you become qualified. Karma can never make one qualified for devotional service. Right? So just like we were discussing in the morning, that the activity, if it's not connected to the Lord, becomes useless. Right? This idea that the activity itself will be useful has no meaning, because unless it's connected to the Lord, nothing has any value. Right? So this aspect here is when it's connected to the Lord through devotional service, then that becomes useful. If it's connected but not in devotion, then we see is it doesn't give the same benefits. Right? It means the karmakandi, how you say, is seeing the Lord, but it's not favorable to the Lord, so it's for his own purpose. Right? Or if it's in devotion, if it's in with the knowledge, then its connection is gives liberation, and that's all. Does it make sense? But when it's favorable in devotional service, in other words, the mentality is favorable, and that's the first step, and ideally the activity itself is actually favorable, right? Then it takes on the qualities of devotional service. Does that make sense here? So the difficulty is what he's saying is he's more honest in that it's more obvious what is going on. That it's just materialistic, it's self-centered, and the God element is just put there because people kind of have a tendency toward that. You want to make it popular, then you have to throw God into it like that. You're not so worried about that. Then the self-centeredness aspect, if it becomes too prominent or God's not involved, then the common people don't take it up. Right? So just to popularize it, then these elements are put in. Does that make sense? But otherwise, they're just working on the point is, you do good work, you will get good result, you will enjoy. That's all. That's their idea. They don't understand there's a higher force at work that sets what's good and bad. But here it's just, they just want to enjoy the fruits of good work. And so it doesn't matter if anybody, who's in charge or not, as long as it works. Does that make sense? So that's why it's considered atheistic. Does that make sense? Yes. Speak.
So the smart is considered atheistic as well?
Yeah. No, it's all the same, because they're following Jaini like that. Just that, how do you say? The smart thing means is he's following the rules because they're how you say? By following that rule, you get the benefit. Like that. That's their purpose. And but it's atheistic because they're not actually taking God really into consideration. That's not the purpose that they're dealing with. Does that make sense? So this whole idea that action, that good action, has anything separate from God, that's been pointed out as atheistic. It's just a variety of karma. So we always have to be very, very careful, because many times we'll consider, is good action, then you're qualified for devotional service. Bad action, you're not. Does that make sense? You know, there's the element of setting example, and how can somebody's done something wrong, but then how do you clear away, you know, and then just like the smarta here, you know, it's like when it was, you know, he's telling to another person, your son killed a spider, he has to do the Chandrayana fasting, which is very severe. Chandrayana fasting means that on the full moon day you can take 15 bites of food. And, you know, and that then it reduces down until the new moon when you eat, you know, no food, you fast completely. And then the next day again, one bite, two bites like this. You know, or you can do it in verse, start with a one bite, go up to 15 and go down to one. In any case, there's different forms of it, but it's a very severe fasting. I think you get, in total, there's a certain amount, I think 240 bites of food in the month. That's what you're limited to. So some people do it, you know, the same amount every day, like that. But in any case, it's got its. So when he mentioned, well, your son was also involved in this, you know, as my son was, when your son also, then he looks it up. Oh, there's a mistake here. You know, you don't have to do it. You know, the what do you call it? The spider just becomes a rag. You know how that works? I don't know, but you know, generally Chandrayana is not for minor offenses like that. You know, especially because spider's not something that is used as an omen. You kill the animals that are used in omens, that's considered worse than just general. So the tick-tickies, small, the frogs, this, that, whatever is used within omens, then that's worse than just general. Otherwise, you have to kill a lot of them to use such. But he was being very, very strict here. Who knows why? Maybe because it was the other guy's son or whatever the reason. You know, they think it's by more severe than people become more impressed. You know what I'm saying? But so we have to be very, very careful between the fine lines. So how is it that, oh, if you've taken up devotional service, then if you commit anything, then that's worse. And so that can't be, how do you say, purified. It can't be forgiven. But if it was before, you could do any unlimited amount of nonsense. It doesn't matter. But the point is the heart, it's the same, you know, because the point is, once somebody's taken up devotional service, where is there a time when they're never they're not engaged in devotional service? Does that make sense? They're always devotees. Very few will actually leave Krishna, you know, active Krishna conscious and identify not as a devotee and nothing to do with devotional service, nothing to do with Krishna and anything like that. Does that make sense? So how do you do? So one's more active, one's not. So if somebody can classify yourself as not active, then it's okay. So how is that defined? You know what I'm saying? Why? So there's this element of the karma is qualifying you or not. You understand? So this aspect of devotion, this point, means the book is specifically, in one sense, means it has a dual purpose. One, it will be for identifying and preaching to others and everything like that. The other will be for identifying these aspects in ourself. Does that make sense? So we always have to be very, very careful, because otherwise there's always an idea of a material qualification for devotional service. Right? In other words, they'll be supportive. It means material qualities are supportive, right? Because the qualities come from Krishna. But the point is, unless you see them in connection to Krishna, how do they have anything to do with devotional service? Right? Does that make sense? Someone is focused. So that would be good for devotional service, because then they'll focus on the chanting, focus on the service. But just being focused doesn't make you more Krishna conscious. Just because you're focused doesn't mean that you're more qualified for devotional service. Does that make sense? No, when you engage that focus, you know, engage that focus in the Krishna service, then it becomes a qualification. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't stand on its own. The idea is nothing stands on its own if it's not connected to Krishna. Otherwise, someone will think, well, you know, I went to school, I got a PhD, so I'm more qualified than just a common devotee. But why? What has that got to do with devotional service? Right? This is classified by Kapila Muni in the Bhagavatam as devotional service in the mode of ignorance. that you think your material qualification is actually what makes you more qualified than others in devotional service. It's actually mentioned, you know, and so all these things, better birth, better position, you know, education, whatever it may be, you consider because of that you are more qualified. But it has nothing to do with it. Qualification is the devotion itself, the commitment to Krishna, seeing Krishna. You know what I'm saying? That way then you then say. You know, it's just like we had Parasara Muni and Markandeya Rishi. Markandeya Rishi is Chiranjeev, so he lives, you know, basically the lifetime of Brahma. He lives a long time. He's been around since the beginning, I think, since the first Kalpa. So he is quite, you know, mature, you know, in time. So generally if Markandeya is present in an assembly of sages, you know, he speaks. So one day he was sitting and speaking, you know, and all the sages are facing him, and then suddenly he stands up. Right? So everybody is, you know, turns around expecting to see, you know, Narad Muni or Lord Brahma or Vishnu himself, Lord Shiva. You know, he has to be someone of that caliber, because otherwise, who is more senior than Markandeya? Okay, four Kumaras, like that. But it has to be that caliber, otherwise. So they turn around and they see this little 8-year-old boy, you know, Parasara Muni. And so they're all surprised. And then Markandeya asking you, please come and you sit and you speak. We'll listen to you. He says, no, but you're the senior. You know, why you're, I'm the most junior here in this assembly. And Markandeya said, you have been more conscious in your 8 years than I have been, you know, since the beginning of the creation. Therefore, you're older. Does that make sense? Right. So being God conscious, that's the qualification. Does that make sense? These others can be very, very useful, right? One is very materially qualified. If he can, without ego, engage that in Krishna's service, he can do amazing things, right? But if due to his ego he can't, because he thinks he's better, then how will it work? How will the chit potency work? Devotional service works on chit potency. So how will the chit potency enter it if the false ego is blocking? Does that make sense? So that always has to be seen. I'm sure everybody's had experience of sometimes something that you're actually quite good at or very confident at, then you go to do it and it doesn't come out good at all. Right? Because of this point. Right? Because of this point. Does that make sense? Right? So therefore, it also, this applies in our own life. Right? I mean, someone who's taking this as a doctrine and all that, of course, then that's a problem. Even though they talk about God or this or worship of a deity, it's still, it's all atheistic because they're not actually seeing how the Lord is making things work. Right? On the other hand, then, you have the problem is that within our own life, sometimes we take the element of karma as more important than devotional service. Does that make sense? So many other things can get in the way. Okay. So then the next verse then. Material happiness remains covetable by the materialist as long as they believe that material enjoyment is the bliss. Either in the name of selfishness or unselfishness, they work for that and enjoy it. In reality, the material happiness is quite insignificant. It is not the useful companion of the sentient object. Right, sentient object being the soul. Therefore, those who are conscious among the materialists cannot remain satisfied with the material bliss. Since the transcendental principle is not within their reach, eternal bliss in it is not required by them, inquired by them. Naturally, therefore, they conceive the materialistic extinction as bliss and run after it. Right, you see what's happening here is now he's switching to the other form. Right? So now we've discussed materialism. Right, where the idea that I will enjoy in the world, right? But now you have that. The problem is they're not conscious of something higher, right? They're not aware of their lack of satisfaction. So they're focused on, if I just perform the karma right, I will get the good result. And then from getting good results, they will be happy, right? But, you know, there's always going to be a problem, because who is able to perfectly perform all activities perfect according to karma? There's always going to be some mistake, right? So therefore, those who are more conscious, then they have a problem, because they are unable to, access this material bliss that the materialists are talking about, right? And the need for something long-term, because they see happiness is always temporary. Well, the other ones are talking about, no, it's eternal, because you're always getting the fruits of your good work, and so therefore you're always enjoying. Right? But that's okay if everything is so nicely, you know, staggered like that. But some things come after a longer time, sometimes immediately. Sometimes you're getting the reactions of past lives, bad things. So it's a whole mix. So it's never going to always be eternal. So they have that faith that will be, I'll just perform this, I'll make this adjustment and all that. So they go on with that determination. I wasn't selfless enough, or I wasn't, you know, focused enough, or I made a mistake in the rule. Therefore, I had this problem. So they're not really conscious beyond it. But those who are conscious that actually, no, it's temporary, and it's not. So they have a problem, because they can't access material happiness at the same time as they haven't inquired into actual spiritual happiness. So they come up with the idea of that you just, self-extinction. Right? You remove the concept of the individual soul, I will be happy. Right? You know, either your impersonalism or voidism. Right? The soul, you just merge in Brahman, or the soul just disappears. Like that. In any case, you're not involved with the material world. Material world gives pain, therefore you remove the pain, you'll be happy. Right? But this is also the definition of material happiness. Remove the pain, you're happy. So it's not actually spiritual happiness. All it is just another form of material happiness. But it's in a different category, you know, because you're not trying to enjoy the senses, you're trying to get rid of them. Does that make sense? Material happiness means when what is bothering you goes away, you call that happy. Right? Or feeling hot. Right, so that's a pain. Then you go into a room that's cool. Then, as the heat goes away, during that movement, you are feeling happy. Right, as soon as the heat is gone, you're not feeling the pain of heat anymore. Then you don't call that pleasure anymore. It's just normal. And then you start thinking, you know, well, what else is going on? What's to eat? What's on television? What's, you know, like that. You know what I'm saying? During those moments of the difference between cold and hot, right? Then you are interested in the profit gained there, right? And so that focus is there. But as soon as that's over, you have to look for something else to make yourself happy. Right? Does that make sense? So we see is that the material happiness is always based on getting rid of a pain. You're hungry, so by eating you get rid of the pain of hunger. Right? Does that make sense? So as there's still a difference, the greater the pleasure. The closer, then the less. If you're only a little hungry, then eating something gives you a little pleasure. You're really hungry, eating something gives you more pleasure. You understand? So that's why you know, but most people don't look at this way. They only apply it, but this is the principle of economics, right? The greater the distance between, you know, what you have and what it can get for you, then the greater the profit. As that becomes narrowed, then it's less. You understand? It's the same principle. So as long as the soul thinks I'm getting profit from this, then their interest is there. But as soon as that profit is lost, you know, or becomes minuscule, that something else is more valuable, then like that. You know, now I'm bored. Okay, so now what's the difference between me being bored and something else? So then I find something to do. So I feel happy for those few moments. And then it goes, then hunger comes up. And then, oh, I have to eat. You understand? So all one is doing is going from removal of one pain to removal of the next. Right? And then, you know, so then the happiness and distress are going up and down like that. Does that make sense? So the end, yeah. The economic principle works on the same thing. Yes?
So what is the Brahman realization, and is that, what happiness would that be?
Removing pain of the material, of material existence. You understand? Material existence is a pain. You get rid of it, then you're happy, right? For that moment. And then afterwards, then what do? You get bored. You know, so it's the same thing. It always comes up to that point of, then what are you going to do? Okay, now you've gotten rid of that hunger. Now what are you going to do? Then you've got to find something else to do. Now you're not hot anymore, or now you're not cold anymore. Now what are you going to do? So the point is when you're dealing with timing from here, you know, it's just like how, I mean, if the pain of that goes away, how long can you be happy with that if there's no one else to share it with, right? You know, you can go on telling, but it's just yourself. How long can you go, okay, great, and now I'm not in the material world anymore, I'm freed from that, and you know, and this is really nice, and that. How long does that last? Right? Some minutes? You know, at best? You understand? Then you want to do something. Okay? So if you're dealing on it within, compared to here, that the spiritual time means the time in which you're not going to get out of. Right? In other words, you're not going to get beyond the material sphere. Right? You'll be liberated, but you're not going to get into the spiritual world. Right? That time is different. You're still within that. So Mahavishnu, then he breathes in and out, that's 3/4 of a second, right? But that's one lifetime of Brahma. Right? 311 trillion years. Okay, so therefore, how many 3/4 of a second in 5 minutes? Right? Quite a few. So even you're there for, you know, 20, 50, 100, you know, 200 lifetimes of Brahma. But out there where you're experiencing, it's still only going to be 5 minutes. So you'll have worked all that time, done all that austerity, everything for 5 minutes. It's still not going to, you don't get more than that, you know, 6 minutes, or whatever it is, but I'm just saying, whatever, you know. So it's like, that's all it is. Then you have to do something, and what do you know about doing? You don't know spiritual, because you've negated form, relationships, anything. So anything that could get you into the spiritual world, you've negated. So all that is left in activity is material. So then therefore they come back again here. They're saying the devotee, he negates material endeavor but replaces it with spiritual. Therefore when he's liberated, he doesn't stop there. He keeps going until he gets to prema. That's the difference. Does that make sense? So that's what's going on. So now this is the other side, right? We were saying is that there's two kinds of, we have with faith and which is just in fear. Of that with faith, then you have the that which is based on karma and that which is based on jnana. So karma, now we've discussed it very fully, you know, with these, the most developed in these forms is then Jaimini and this what is it, what, Kumte? Is that how you say it? How do you say it? I think something, I don't know. At least that's how you say it in English, like that. Nice French, who cares? How you say it, right? You know. We're talking in English here. Right? You know. Okay. Okay, so then here, non-existence. They say that existence itself is misery. Right? Since non-existence is blissful, even by accepting physical distress, one should inquire after the bliss of extinction. So nirvana. Right? Does that make sense? So this is, their idea is that since then, whatever happens here is temporary, ends up in, it's going to be a pain anyway, right? Because anything is going to the pleasure has to end in, it goes down. Whatever goes up must come down, right? And then whatever goes down will go up again. So the problem is it's just going to be a roller coaster ride. So seeing that, then they say, I don't want to be involved. It's not worth it. Does that make sense? So that's the hope. When the materialistic bliss doctrine of the atheistic Karmavada was strongly followed in India, then the materialistic Brahmin preachers of that doctrine had held the transcendental self-revealed Vedas as only the scriptures of piety. Right? In other words, these Brahmins were preaching that the Vedas are only talking about piety. There is no discussion of transcendence. Right? They are unable to, one, unable to see it or appreciate it. Two, they just avoid it. So karmakanda was all there was. The atheistic Karmavad, they were saying, is the real doctrine of the Vedas. And also they were preaching the sacrificial performances for gaining such sensual pleasures in this world, as well as the pleasure with heavenly nymphs and drinking of nectar in the Indrapuri after one's death. Right, so you perform all these different sacrifices, all this piety, you'll enjoy here, and you'll go to the heavenly planets where everything will also be quite nice. Right, so that's their idea, is that this is all the Vedas we're talking about. Being discontented of this materialistic bliss, the Kshatriya-born Gautama Buddha established his philosophy of Buddhism, advocating the bliss of extinction, after studying the inevitability of physical sufferings. There are also evidences of such type of doctrine being preached in the country before Buddha, but the Buddha has been accepted as the original founder of that Nirvanavad by his followers, since it became popular from the time of Gautama Buddha. What he's saying is, whatever there is in philosophy has always been there. Right? It means when the Vedic culture is established, then every other kind of mentality is established with it. It's just that whether it's very big or very small, you know? Does that make sense? You know, like genes, you take genes, they're always there, but some guy's riding on the back of what do you call it? You know, horses that would herd around cows to the slaughterhouse, they're the only guys who would wear them. Nobody else in their right mind would ever wear such things. But now, they're haute couture, right? You know, like that. So, you know, how you say, you know, and you know, I say, does that make sense? You know, so like that. So it's just a matter of these philosophies are always there. The impersonalism was always there. It's just that, you know, Shankara makes it prominent, or here Buddha makes it prominent. So his followers give him the credit for it, but the philosophy was always there. There's a story. I'm not sure. I think it's Vishnu Purana where the demons were performing all kinds of, demons were demons and they were always trying to take over the heavenly planets, but the demigods always beat them. So then they asked their acharya what to do. Why is it they're more powerful? Right? Because they, you know, means in other words, the Brahman reveals what you ask. He doesn't reveal more generally. So they never inquire beyond. So they ask, why are they more powerful than us? So then he's saying, because they follow, you know, the activities described in the Vedas, right? That's what makes them powerful. So the demon says, so then teach us that, you know. So then they divide into three groups. One was performing yajnas, one was performing, I think, austerities, and I think the other one is performing study of the shastras, like this. So then they started to become very powerful. So then the demigods were really worried. They went to, you know, Brahma, then they all went to Lord Vishnu, and then Vishnu said, okay, I'm going to give a solution to this problem, but anybody who would like to come back to me now, before I give this solution, you know, you can come now. So all of them, you know, had some excuse why they had to get home for, you know, dinner, you know, I left the oven on, or, you know, oh, I got to pick the kid up from school, or, you know, something. You know, so then none of them took advantage. So then, because his point was, is the solution's worse than the problem. So then, at that time, then two beings came from behind him. That was the Jinnah and the Adi Buddha. So Jinnah is the original Jain, and Adi Buddha is the original Buddha. So they're actually Vishnu.
But they come and then they profess these varieties of, how you say, you know, nirvan, like that. So then Buddha went to the guys who were doing the sacrifice, you know, because animal sacrifice, and then he was preaching nonviolence and all that. And then the sacrifice and then Jinnah went to the others, you know, and that said, but, you know, because their thing is Syadvad. Syad means, I said, what? Maybe. Yeah, it means maybe. So he's saying, why are you doing this? Because then we'll get this result. But maybe you will, maybe you won't. You know, so he just bewildered their minds. So between Buddha and Jinnah, then they bewildered all these demons. They gave up all the sacrifice and this went back to their normal activities. Like that. So these philosophies are meant for bewildering the minds of the atheists. Right? So, but the point being he's giving here is that the followers of Gautama Buddha will give him the credit for establishing this philosophy. But it's always a philosophy that's there in the mind of the conditioned living entity. Right? It's a possibility. Right? Just like one can be king of heaven or one can be, you know, worm and stool. It's they're all options that are available. It's just a matter of who's doing what when. Does that make sense? Even during the time of Buddha, or slightly before him, another preacher named Jinnah, born of the Vaishya family, had preached a similar doctrine called Jainism. While Jainism remained only in India, Buddhism traveled to the foreign lands like China, Tatar, Siam, Japan, Burma, Ceylon, etc. Still, it is prevalent in many countries. Buddhism has developed many branches. Perhaps the theory of extinction, or Jata Nirvanavad, is seen in all the branches. Since human nature cannot remain without trusting in God, worship of God is also seen in some of the branches of Buddhism. Right, so they always have to have some form of, it means depending on what it is that, I'm not sure if you'll get into it in detail here, but you have this, I think the Mahayana and Hinayana. Mahayana, then once you get to a certain level of, I guess, advancement, then they reveal about the Adi Buddha, right? You know, forearm form, you know, blue, lays on a, you know, snake, you know, like that. So before the creation, you know, is there, during is after the creation. In other words, is Vishnu. But they reveal the worship of him like that. Or you see in the what do you call it, the Tibetans, then they'll worship the Lord Shiva and, how you say, Prakriti and time. They're their deities. So the point is people don't function well without deities, without some form of worship, without something that inspires and makes one go forward. Otherwise, you see, is the religious sentiment when there is a form is much greater, right? Does that make sense? You know, you have, means your other forms, then there's always something to focus on, something to be revered. Generally, there's much more commitment and dedication than if there's not. Right, so means your Catholicism, then you have Jesus, but then you have all these different things, the icons, the different things, the worship, the music, the architecture, all these fine points. It's inspiring. The Protestants kicked all of that out, and so basically with time, then you're left with, you have to make Jesus into God to make people inspired. You understand? Because otherwise there isn't any architecture, music, or anything inspiring. There's nothing, there's no deity, there's no nothing. So you have to do something with it. So either it's I'm good, you're bad, therefore I'm inspired because my false ego is so big and whatever I do is the best. So unless you're doing it, you must be wrong and I'm going to show you. That might inspire you, you know, and anything. But other than that, then how do you deal with the main? That's okay, one power for preacher. How do you deal with the mass? So you still have to produce the deity. Does that make sense? It's just the way it is. So then they have all this stuff here. On the other day, when I met a Buddhist of Burma, I inquired him certain questions. He replied that, quote, God is without beginning. He has created all the universe. He himself incarnates as Buddha, and even now he remains in the heavens. By observing discipline and virtue,
we will reach his abode. Right? So here we see is also there's the element of the karma there. Right? By discipline and virtue, just being good. Being good, being selfless, then you'll reach. So the interesting thing is here is they'll use karma, but you know, to get to this nirvana stage. So it's very similar, but it's more obvious the element of self-centeredness is must be removed, while the other ones is hidden. Right? It means you don't want anybody to know about it. You're doing it for yourself. They're here also doing it for yourself, but still there's the element of that you're not basing the sense gratification on yourself. The words of that Buddhist clearly shows that he has not studied the doctrine of Buddha. He has only narrated according to his human nature, calling it as the Buddhistic doctrine. Right? In other words, human nature needs to have a standard of right and wrong, to have an authority, to have an actual final destination or eternal destination. Right? That's just human nature. That's required. So then he is simply speaking that, but in terms of Buddhism. So he's pointing out that he's not actually a Buddhist. Right? All these sophistry cannot be accepted as the asset of the human society. Only they will be enshrined in the books and in the hearts of the preachers. Right? So your common people won't be able to take this. As we mentioned before, they will only be enshrined in the books. People who write the books and the preachers of these books, then they'll be very fixed in these things. But your common people won't be, right? Because of the human need. Right? The followers of these doctrines will only hold the normal principles of human nature as the doctrines of their respective creeds. The universal affection of Comte, Jaimini's God in the form of Apurva, contained in the atheistic Karmavad, doctrine of materialistic extinction of Buddha, etc., will be gradually transformed into the natural religion of human beings. This has already happened. Right. So he's pointing out is that Bhaktivinoda Thakur has an ability, this very, very important ability in preaching, is to start from wherever the person is. It doesn't matter where. And then it's not a matter, oh, that's nonsense, that's bogus. No, it's a matter of, but what is it? And dealing with it and then showing what is actual, real, has something you can work with, and what's not. And then what's not, you drop, and then you work on what's real. And what's not is because of a misunderstanding. You know what I'm saying? Conditioned nature is only a matter of misunderstanding. The actual true position is that of the constitutional. There isn't something else. It's not that many doctrines are there. There's only devotional, pure unalloyed devotional service. That's the only doctrine that there is. But people out of illusion don't see that. And so then they take either pieces of it or based on pieces of that, then take the reverse of it. You know what I'm saying? So they do something with what is the actual inherent natural human nature. Create something that works for them in their conditioning, stage of conditioning. So this idea that there's so many religions, so many paths, so many this is confusing. No, there isn't any of that. It doesn't exist. It's only people make it up. Right? And then other people, out of their need, have faith in it. Does this make sense? So there's only one religion that is worship of Godhead. There isn't something else. Yes.
Yeah. Since this impersonal idea is basically against one's inherent nature and against logic, basically, why is it that today it's so popularly spread and so many people identify with it? Why
do devotees take political correctness as superior to devotion? It's just the power of the material energy. It's illusion. You want to be fooled, you will be. You know what I'm saying? Maya's got a lot of things on sale. So, you know, if you want it, she'll sell it to you. You know? That's the whole thing. You want pure and alloyed devotional service, it's also available. In fact, she'll be the one that arranges it for you. But if you want anything else, then you're going to get that before you're going to get devotional service. You know what I'm saying? So the point is people are just an illusion. So at some point, this one comes up, and another point, another one comes up. The whole of India was Buddhist at one point, except for the Vaishnavas. Like this, you know, so at different times, and the Mayavadis are prominent there, Vaishnavism is prominent sometime. It just keeps changing around according to the conditioning or the desire of the living entities. Does that make sense? So that's why then the preachers preach. Because otherwise, if it just all works perfectly, what are we going to do? You know what I'm saying? You have to do something. This idea that everything will happen for us, then where would that come from? You know what I'm saying? Where does it come from? I have a perfectly arranged and well-stocked kitchen. Okay? So now according to, you know, the modern concept, therefore I should be constantly eating great food. But how is that great food happening? Is the kitchen going to make it? No, we have to make it. Does that make sense? So in other words, we have to endeavor. Does that make sense? So if you, one can have all kinds of facility, all kinds of ability, all kinds of opportunity, but unless one applies himself, one gets no results. Does that make sense? So the idea is we're not trying to get results for ourselves, we're trying to get results for Krishna. So it's only through action that there is any taste. You know what I'm saying? You're outside, it's hot, you know, inside is cool, right? But it's only when you put the two together, which means through action, that something is happening. You know what I'm saying? So in other words, the two elements of the energy and the energetic have to be combined. Then you get rasa. Does that make sense? Right? So then when everything is being done in connection with Krishna, then rasa is tasted. And when it's not, then you get something inferior. But in any case, it works on the same principle. Unless there's action, there won't be anything. Right? The lazy man is not really enjoying. Right, the very active man, he has so much facility, he's the one enjoying it. Right? Of course, his enjoyment is still temporary, and you know, as much work he puts in it, only that much he gets back. You know? And still there's, you know what I'm saying? So we can still find the problem. But the point is the ones that are successful are the ones that are working, not the ones sitting around doing nothing. Does that make sense? Yeah? So that's why then it's just a matter of these modes are there and whatever people want, that's what's available. So people want this. Right? Because one, there's a material problem that the material world is becoming quite distressful. Then there's a lack of, trust. So therefore you don't want to get too involved with emotions and relationships and things like that. So these impersonal doctrines then support that very nicely. Right? So they'll still, according to their need, be involved in their family life and, you know, business and this and that, but they don't feel, you know, inclined to get too socially involved, other than doing good, right? He said here, observing discipline and virtue, he will reach his abode. So they'll be nice, they'll give in charity, they'll be nice, good people, like that. And they'll be generally very regulated and all. So it will be popular generally to the active class of people. What you notice is that he's coming from the Kshatriya. You know? So there'll have to be some form of very active people. Then it will have some meaning. Like that. Or another form of it, the similar doctrine, he says, Jainism or the Vaishya. So both of these then there will work for them. Does that make sense? You know, that'll work. Because otherwise, the person who's outside of this, it may not be so attractive. You know what I'm saying? So just it's becoming popular in this group. You don't find the person on the street generally becoming Buddhist. You know, they're generally some variety of professionals, intellectuals, this kind of, you know, then it's kind of more popular. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Does that make sense? So then we'll end here. Okay. Now he's going to get into the European avatar of Buddhism, which is pessimism, like that. Because the other one was positivism, so this is pessimism. So very interesting. Okay. Okay. So then we'll continue. Today is Thursday. Tomorrow. Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Jai Srila Prabhupada ki Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi. If I had someone here who could look it up and find it for me, I'd try to get someone.